5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
25 years and my life is still trying to get a back creepy healer of hope for a destination.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, good evening. It is the, good God, 16th of September 2021, or year two in the after times, the after COVID times, which is all very exciting. It's all new. It's all nice and new, but it is 9:30 Central, and it's the new Panic Room episode 246, in case you've tuned into the wrong show, just so you... We've had some very, very confused people phone in, which is always fun. Not that we mock, but, you know, seriously, people. So, anywho, I'm dying to hear... about Xtina, so she's actually had a worse week than me, which is going to take some doing, but let's bring her on.
Come on, how are
with a yee-haw. How are you, Xtina? How are you this evening?
Don't go whining
on. You know, I mean, I've had a bad week. I mean, you've had a bit of a tooth thing, and you've just done nothing but whine about it all week.
I know. Well, you know, it feels like I've had a bad month. You know, we had the virus go through our household, and then like 2 days later. After, you know, I recovered. I was like, yes, I'm doing great. I have no symptoms today. I felt really good. And then, yeah, the oral surgery. And I'm like, man, I wonder what can I get into next week? So.
Well, there you go. I mean, tune in, ladies and gentlemen, for the next exciting installment of what can Xtina catch next? Which is always fun.
I remember back in when we first started the show, we had a segment. I think it was like, what did I fall over or something like
that. It was guess that noise. And it was always you falling over something. But, well, I have to say, I mean, you know, no matter how bad the week is, you know, we have this and this nonsense. Mm-hmm. And it always cheers me up. You know, I tell you, it's funny, the thing that really got me, I mean, it's been... You know, even down to yesterday, I was going to pop out, and my car was dead as a fucking doornail. And one of the neighbours, smashing guy, you know, sort of got to know him, and he came around and with his jumper. Because I do have jumper cables, but my son has them, and they're in his truck, and he was God knows where last night. And, of course, as soon as we hooked it up, and what had happened? What had happened on Saturday? Like, this is that I don't go out much. Saturday was the last time I actually went out of the house, literally, except into the backyard. You know, I've got back from the grocery store, and I have I've got a button, and I hit the button to pop the trunk. And the button to pop the trunk is a big design flaw for clumsy fuckers like me. The button for the trunk is right next to the hazard warning light button. So I just thumped it, and because I switched the hazards on, so the hazard warning has been flashing since sort of Saturday afternoon for as long as it took for the battery to drain. So we got the car started, and I took it for a sort of a good hour spin to charge the battery back up. But the other things and what have you, and then found out my daughter, I have a bank card. That's when she goes skating, I give her the card, because I never have cash. I mean, I just, plus it's expensive to pull cash out these days. Mm-hmm. Some fucker stole her wallet on Tuesday, and then went on a jolly old spree with my money yesterday, including they went back to the skating rink. They treated themselves to Taco Bell, topped up with gas. I really hope for their sake that they don't find out who it is. If we find out, they will find out what I do with people who steal from 12-year-old girls. So, I'm not. My agent was telling him the story today. So, obviously, I cancelled the bank card. And I mean, there's nothing in the. I mean, luckily, there's about $40 in it because she for that rare reason, I don't have lots of money in it, and it's not a main bank card, you know? So I can just put I put in like $100 whenever, you know, to top it up. You know, so I cancelled that, and he said, well, did you call the police? So I can't imagine the cops are going to bust a gut over $40, to be honest. I'd rather go to the skating rink myself and ask around, and somebody will know something.
So,
go and ask very, very politely for my money back. I mean, seriously, to steal from a 12-year-old girl, how fucking scummy. I mean, it's obviously a grown-up because they bought gas. Somebody of driving age. How scummy and low-down can you get, you know? I wish them all the ill in the world. I hope they get COVID. I hope they get explosive diarrhea from the Taco Bell, which, to be fair, is a safe bet, to be honest with you.
It's true.
Every time, I mean, we love Taco Bell, and every time I spend the morning after, you know, having a damn good, jolly good route. So, on the bright side, and you know, you bullied me into doing this, but on the bright side, we used to have Donald on every week or so. On the bright side, let's just thoughts and prayers. Let's just put our hands together and pray to the good Lord that we're not this guy.
God, we have you, but you know. And so, folks, look, you know, believe it or not, I think you all get it. And what I was able to do, the Defense Production Act, and I was able to restart production of bringing a lot of people back to work, delivering,
Well, look, what I want to know is what we're supposed to know. I mean, you know, we've gone from the big orange chimpanzee Trump to this dithering idiot. I am pleased that I am legally not allowed to vote. Yeah, I mean, next year I'm actually going to apply for citizenship of this fine country, but It's lucky they don't allow Biden to talk as much as Trump did, but opposite ends of the scale, but they're both fucking useless. I mean, how is that inspiration? When again you compare, and I said this about Trump, I'll say it about Biden as well. You know, you compare it with the great inspirational orators of our time, like Kennedy, Obama, Churchill, Thatcher. You know, they're not even fit to lick their fucking shoes. I mean, seriously, people in that position need to be, you know, I imagine, you know, I'm trying to stir some sort of national pride or it's just, you know, I don't know. But again, Trump got in because he wasn't Hillary Clinton. Biden's got in because he wasn't Donald Trump. What are we going to get now? I mean, is he going to vote in maybe it's a chinchilla, because it's not Biden and it's kind of, you know, it makes more sense. But
I think
I remember I read Thatcher's autobiography. I mean, it's two fucking great big 600-page volume. Read them over the course of like a year and a half. But one of the first things, when she was being groomed to be prime minister, she had tutoring in how to speak, you know, that sort of slow, deeper, you know, the tip of the Thatcher voice, that was manufactured because her true voice was kind of a little bit higher, a little bit faster. So she was taught how to speak in a commanding way, in a inspirational way, you know. I mean, some have it naturally, some are taught it, but somebody needs to take Biden onto one side and say, just either just stop trying to talk to people. You know, let Kamala do it. You know, let a grown up have a go. You know, or just learn how to speak properly. I mean, Ronald Reagan was not the brightest button on the shirt by all accounts, but he spoke incredibly well. You know, he could command. Yeah. Obviously, being an actor, you know, probably helped a hell of a lot. He could command the room. I mean, think of the great speeches of JFK. I mean, they're just wow. You know, and I don't know. It is sad times that we live in, between that and COVID and people stealing money off little girls. And it's just here's my theory. And I think as we get older, I think maybe it's perception. As we get older, I mean, every generation gets this. It seems to get worse. The world gets worse. And I think it's sort of nature gearing us up. So by the time it's time to go, you know, we're kind of grateful.
We're ready.
So I don't have to deal with this bullshit anymore. Great. You know, bring it on. You know, bring it on, Mr. Death. You know, because I'm done with this crap. That's my theory. Anyway, so we could moan on it. Don't forget, on our 250th show, which is only other four shows, it's just me and Extina. And we're going to have a good old moan for an hour and a half.
It's going to be so much fun. Because we're just going to whinge for an hour and a half.
Moan and whine for an hour. Brilliant. In fact, make it a two-hour show. We could cram a lot in 2 hours. So what have we got going on this evening?
Okay. I'm going to say just once because, I'm in a little pain here, and I'm hoping I don't botch it up too much. So, never mind. Anyway, this week on the Bandage Room, I don't even know what I'm saying right now. We have Splatterpunk Award nominee Glenn Ralph, and he's been on the show before, so it'd be exciting to see what he's been doing. And our next guest would be horror author Nick Bodick. And he was the book narrator for Grady Hendrix, whom we had on, a month or so ago. So
super duper. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's so Nick is on first, Do you want to introduce him, or are you not to it?
I'm up to it, yes. Our first guest of the night is horror author Nick Bodick.
Hello.
Hi. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? We're better for having had a good old moan. I have to say. There's nothing better than having a good old whinge, I say.
I've been enjoying it.
Oh, dear. Well, what a week! Let me just finish this story. I actually met my neighbour because on Saturday morning, I got up, let my dogs out, and there's this fucking great big pit bull. Big white pit bull in our backyard. And it took me a minute because we have a pit bull. I was like, that's not out. One, it's the wrong colour. And two, it's like twice her size. So I got all panicky, got my dogs, because we got these two little small puppies and all the rest of it. And went round ready to tear this guy's head off. And he was the nicest bloke. To apologize, him and his wife brought me a box of buns and some beer. And he was the guy, and we got chatting and that. He was the guy who came and rescued me when my car died. So, you know, it kind of balances out the piece of shit who stole my daughter's bank card. So, So anyway, Nick is here to talk to us. I presume Nick's here to talk to us, or maybe not. I don't know about his book, Daughter's Drawings, which is not published yet. When is it due for publication, sir?
It's going to be the first quarter of next year. Don't have an official date yet, but working on that right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll be by March 2022.
Oh, wowza. So the tagline, life imitating art isn't always exact, which sounds kind of intriguing. So just tell us a bit more about it, Nate.
Yeah, it's about a guy who gives his daughter a bank card and sends her to a skating rink and it gets stolen.
Oh, you see, I'm suing. I'm suing. You will hear from my lawyer. You really will.
No, it's about a family who goes on a road trip, and while they're eating at this restaurant, their car gets broken into, and the only thing that's stolen is the daughter's collection of drawings and paintings and, you know, all her artwork, because that's like what she does. She's an artist. She's 6 years old when the book starts. And then for the next several years, they start getting these pieces of art back, like dropped off in their mailbox or mailed to them or whatever. And they have like additions to them. Also, the things that are being depicted in the drawings, whoever stole them is like bringing them to life in really like fucked up ways. And that's the crux of the story.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's pretty original. And what was the inspiration?
There was a story, because I write for the Reddit community, No Sleep. I'm sure you guys are familiar with it, maybe.
Indeed, yeah. Yes, we are, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got my start. And there was a story there years ago, and if you're familiar with No Sleep, you'll be familiar with it, Pen Pal by Dayson Auerbach. It's like one of the biggest stories out of there. And that story was actually like the main inspiration for mine. I loved the book Pen Pal. And then I wrote a short story, and it's the short story version of Daughter's Drawings, and posted it to No Sleep. And it like blew up there and then went viral and all that. And then actually the guy who you had on last month, Felix Blackwell, he helped me a lot in making it a novel. So thank you, Felix.
Yeah, thank you, Felix. Yeah, and he had a lot of success that way with Stolen Tongues. I mean, that sort of took off
big time. That is my favorite book of all time.
Yeah, I have my copy, and I need to find time to sit and read it. I've got a whole bookshelf full of books I need to find time to read. Yeah, you know what it's, you know how it goes. You know how it goes.
And I just realized I said the way wrong name earlier. Yeah, you said Felix. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's who it was. Yes, we had so much fun with Felix on the show. And the week he was on, I had started reading Stolen Tongues. And I've watched all the people talking about the book and saying how they were so, you know, scared, and thinking no book has ever actually scared me. Thinking, you know, I've kind of maybe gotten a little, you know, I don't know, mm-hmm. nervous, I don't know, but I'm really scared. And I'm telling you, I had nightmares from this book, and I think it was paranoid, and it definitely sticks with you. So, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's so good. I encourage everyone I talk to read it, and especially in our kind of, like, and not that I'm trying to say I'm even on Felix's level when it comes to writing, but, like, his is like the golden standard for people who write on no sleep. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. I love that book.
Yeah, and how did you get involved in the audiobook?
That I actually started doing. Okay, so I started a YouTube channel, and the main kind of focus of that is a series I have called 100% True, which is where I connect with these different authors and kind of do what you guys are doing now, but it's very focused on, it's called 100% True, the History of Creepypasta and Internet Horror. So I give exactly that. It's a history of all these different stories, and I've kind of equated it to like the bonus features section on like a mm-hmm. DVD or a Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk to the authors, and they'll give stuff like ideas they had that didn't pan out for the story and where they got the idea from and alternate endings and all that. But then, so I was doing this show for a while and still am. But then I decided to start kind of supplementing my channel with narrations of my own stories. And from there, I've never actually done a full audiobook, but I've been talking to a couple different authors about doing theirs, and I'm hoping that'll pan out because I love doing it.
Yeah. We had a clip of you reading from Stolen Tongues, and that was pretty kick-ass. That was great. And speaking of you doing narration, you're going to read an excerpt from your book for us, right? Yay.
Yeah, I got one here and ready to go. Should I start now?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go for it. Do you need to set it up first, or just go for it?
This is kind of the very middle of the book, actually. It's after the initial, the conflict starts where they're robbed at the diner. And then this is when our main character, our narrator, has gone back he's gone back to the scene of the crime, literally, sort of. So that's where we start here. Excuse me. All right. The bell dinged as I pushed it open, and it was once again like nails on a chalkboard. A few heads turned instinctively towards me as I walked into the restaurant, their absent and uninterested gazes quickly turning back to their food. None of the patrons that day looked familiar to me, and I had pictured the faces of everyone that had been there during our first visit over 2 years ago every day since. And then, out from the kitchen walked a portly woman with a look on her face that told the world she was tired of her job, and a name tag that read Roberta. "Take a seat wherever you like. I'll be right with you," she said as she strolled by. I didn't reply, instead just standing there, waiting for the waitress to be finished. After checking on the people at the two booths, she walked back behind the counter and up to me. "Help you with something?" she asked, ascertaining that I wasn't there for a meal. I studied her face, looking for any tell that she recognized me, but there was none. To her, I was stepping into Daisy's Diner for the first time. I held up the picture of the little girl whose beautiful smile was forever snuffed out. "By some miracle, do you have any idea who this is, this little girl?" She looked at the picture for longer than I expected her to, and for a moment I could swear her expression shifted, ever so slightly, to one containing some modicum of familiarity, before stealing itself over once again. "Can't say I do," she finally answered, almost defiantly. "Are you sure?" I was about to press her, but I was cut off by one of the two men at the booth next to the couples. "The hell's going on out there?" he said, loud enough for everyone to hear. I looked over to him, then followed his line of sight outside. In the parking lot, turned to me, was a person in a gray hoodie, standing at the passenger side door of my car, attempting to break in. "No fucking way," I yelled incredulously. In the moment, with the anxiety of being there and the pure shock and disbelief that it was happening, I thought, someone's breaking into my car at Daisy's Diner again. But in retrospect, it was very obviously a trap, one that I foolishly fell into. I turned around and barreled through the door. The sounds of the world seemed muffled, and the ding of the door didn't register for me, but it must have for the person trying to break into my car. As I pushed through the door, he took off running, heading for the side of the building. Whoops. Sorry. I pursued, running as fast as I could, nearly falling when my foot slipped as I rounded the corner. I caught a glimpse of the hooded person as they turned the next corner and fled behind Daisy's Diner. My heart was in my throat as my feet swiftly pounded against the pavement. It was him. It had to be. It was him, and I was only a few paces behind him. I could end this nightmare right now, end our torment, and get back to a life that wasn't ruled by fear. The end of our ordeal was, literally, just around the corner. And when I turned that corner, my field of vision narrowed, and for the first time, after more than 2 years of his terrorizing us, I was face to face with the person responsible for our ever-present feeling of unease. I saw the white mask that had "high" scribbled on it in crayons of all different colors and a variety of sizes for all of a split second. As I turned to the rear of the building, the man in the mask swung something at me. I heard a dry, metallic crack, and everything went white. I suddenly jolted awake and scurried to my feet, and then nearly collapsed under the pressure of the most vicious headache I had ever experienced. Wherever I was, it was pitch black. I instinctively squinted my eyes as if there was some light I was sensitive to and began to feel around for a wall, a door, something, anything. I had only just begun my search when the entire area to my left burst to life with a hellish mix of blinding light and screaming static. I squeezed my eyes shut and covered my ears until the static din suddenly ceased. I could see through my eyelids that the light had dimmed, so in spite of the disorienting pounding on the left side of my head, I risked opening my eyes just a crack. On the opposite side of whatever this structure was, stood a collection of televisions, some big, some small, but all of them older-style tube TVs. What I assumed had been static on the screen had now given way to video, the setting of which I recognized immediately. The backdrop was still stained with the blood of... I'm going to stop there.
So oh, you were doing so well. I was enjoying that.
Okay, I don't want to get, like, there was about to be a spoiler. I was literally one word away from, like, a really big thing, so I should have, yeah, my bad.
No, that's fine. So now, I mean, brilliant marketing, because, I mean, I for one want to buy the book now, so I know what happens next. But you've got me hooked.
Thank you.
He's going to have to promise to come back when the book comes out and more reading. And,
Absolutely. Definitely.
You know, you were talking about the no sleep thing, and I remember watching a little YouTube video of the creepypasta. I think it was the Russian sleep study, I think it was called. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Oh my word. I remember that one.
That scared the crap out of me. And I swear that there's, like, I don't know, it was too detailed and just, I'm like, that had to have happened somewhere, which makes it all the creepier, of course, you know. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So whenever, I know, right? That was just gruesome. It was just, oh, it's so disturbing. And then when I found out that it wasn't even true, it was just a, you know, story that they, you know, that they made up, it still creeped me out. I don't care. You know, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no, that story and, like, the ones that came out around that same time, those are all, like, that was before everyone knew that the scary stories you read online were all made up. Like, back when the Russian sleep experiment came out, that was when people were really, like, they were putting these stories out anonymously, and they were, like, doing everything they could to make people believe they were real. And, like, that always makes those older ones so much more creepy.
It did. It very much read as real, and even the YouTube video I saw, it was definitely totally creepy. I wanted to ask you guys, have you, either one of you seen the new movie Malignant? I'm seeing people talk about this all over.
Yeah.
I
watched it over the past couple of nights. It's all right. It's I'm going to defer to Nick. What do you think?
Problematic.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm not a very harsh judge of movies. I can always find something I like in a movie. But my dad, who I talked to the other day, he said that Malignant is without question the worst movie he has ever seen.
Oh really? I wouldn't. It's a bit harsh. Nick's dad.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go that far, but
I've seen some
real drag.
Right. And yeah, no, I think it served its purpose. I don't think anywhere near James Wan at his best.
Absolutely not.
James Wan made the scariest movie of all time for me, which is the first Insidious. That movie
scared the shit out of me. Absolutely. It still does.
So
it's one that me and my daughter, we come back to. I think we've seen the whole series, but that first one makes me jump every damn time. It just creeps me out. By contrast, I went to see the new Candyman movie. Now that could rank as one of the worst films I've seen. It was another one of it was. I mean, I remember the original. I remember the original Clive Barker, the short story it was based on. The original was very grimy, grubby. This was all. It was like very sanitized and all very nicey, and yeah, they had some gory moments, but it was just not. Nah, you know what I mean? It was like a lot of like Pet Sematary, like Poltergeist, these remakes, that all I wanted to do was watch the original. And I'll find it somewhere, and I want to watch the original. But Malignant, clearly, obviously, it's based on the, and I was going to look it up, actually, the true story of, it was in Victorian times, the guy who had a face on the back of his head, his twin. The back of his head.
Oh, yeah,
and I guess it was based
that.
On
yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name now. And he said it used to whisper to, and obviously that's where the idea has come from for this. But it was okay. The twist I saw coming pretty much, you know, a quarter of the way through. It's not one's best, I have to say. It was almost like he phoned it in, you know what I mean?
And that's pretty much how I feel. I'm not mad that I watched it. It's not that I wish I could have the time back, but yeah, it was remarkably unremarkable.
Yeah, I did watch.
For a James Wan movie.
Yeah, I watched Demonic, which is a Neil Blomkamp, who made one of my District 9, which is one of my favorite. Was it District 9? District 7? District 9. One of my favorite movies of all. So again, that is one I can watch and watch and watch and watch. And that's not bad. It's a bit different. I would recommend it. Over Malignant, I think Demonic would probably give you more value for money.
I
was thinking of a different movie.
Oh, were you? Oh.
I was thinking of an older movie called Demonic. Came out in, 2016. I didn't know Blomkamp had made a new one. I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, it's just out. I think it's on was it HBO Max, whatever. But it's good. It's good. It's more. It's got more to it, and it's a bit different. You know, I think like Malignant was not different. And I mean, the basic premise, they could have done so much more with it than it just being a slasher movie. You know, and there's some of the
right.
twists and the. It was all neatly wrapped up a little bit too much for me. I like loose ends and, you know, you're left thinking about it at the end and that sort of thing. But, we've now trashed James Wan's career, so he's ruined now.
I find it so weird that, you know, I'm seeing the posts from friends on Facebook and either they absolutely loved it or absolutely hated it, and there's no in between. And I, you know, have you ever looked at like Amazon reviews? And it's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go buy a book and you see reviews to saying how awful it is, and then you see reviews saying how wonderful it is. So I don't know why people go buy reviews at all. Like I never.
I do.
Let them.
Not so much for books, but movies. I mean, if I go straight, I've got IMDb on my cell phone. I just go straight to that and check it out on IMDb. Which
IMDb
I know
is the worst place for reviews.
I know. I will not see a movie on the back of an IMDb review. Seriously. You know, I'll look, because again, obviously, I know, you know, they a lot of the reviews are sort of obviously by the cast and crew, you know, but I rarely, I mean, I buy just about everything possible on Amazon, and I always check the review. I always look at the bad reviews first. I'm not interested in people who think it's the best thing ever. I want to see, yeah, what went wrong, what was the problem with it, the negative
stuff.
Why did you hate it? And again, I have deliberately, when we moved to the new house, you know, I had to buy a bunch of stuff for the house. Everything I checked and double checked, and I read the reviews, and some I just, no, I'm not buying that because the review said it was, you know, there was this and that wrong with it, and this went wrong. And but yeah, I should know better with IMDb. But where else do you look for, you know, to find out whether I should, you know, invest an hour and a half, 2 hours of my life watching a movie or not? You know.
Yeah.
James, I don't know if I shared this with you or not, but I am reading a Stephen King book right now, and as publishers, I want to say that you know, mistakes get through, you know, often,
mm-hmm.
and we are mortified when it happens. But I will say that I'm reading a Stephen King book right now, and I found a typo.
Oh my goodness,
mate. I'm telling you, yes, it was, and there's no way around it. I mean, you can't say, well, maybe, no, it was a typo, and I'm like, I don't know, it just made me feel like, okay, I don't feel quite so bad when there's a typo that gets through from Hellbound, so
yeah.
There you have
there
it.
There you go. There you go.
I know. So,
reading Scarlet Gospels, the Clive Barker, a couple of years ago, I spent a fortune, got pre-ordered a signed copy, and yeah, there was a bunch of, you know, just typos all the way through. And funny enough, I was reading The Godfather 2 years ago, finally got around to reading The Godfather. And one thing that really bugged me was the lack of Oxford commas. Not one. Huh. It's like poot,
wow.
So come on. Pull your finger out, buddy.
Yeah, that would bug me. That would bug me.
It bugged me. Being brought up on Oxford commas, obviously, it bugged the shit out of me. But nonetheless, it's a damn good book, actually. It's a very, very good book.
Which Stephen King book has the type of?
Joyland. Yeah, Joyland. I'll send you the screenshot. I was
Joyland.
Totally excited. Yeah. And I'm loving it. I really am.
It's a great
really
book.
It's a great
sort of coming of age book. It's another one where he didn't really need to try and, you know, shoehorn in some sort of supernatural thing. It's almost like an afterthought. And you don't need it. Steve. And I know he's a big fan of the show, Steve. You don't need it. Just right, do what you do best. Don't try and put the ghost in it, because, you know, the constant readers, we constant readers don't need that. You know, just write. Like I say, you could take the it out of it and it'd still be a damn fine book.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a few that are like that. Yeah. Well, a few. There's a lot that are like that. But yeah, I used to have a huge collection of Stephen King books, and I've moved a few times and lost all of them. So we have this wonderful little used bookstore that I'm trying to build up my collection again, which is really fun. Not so much fun for the bank account, because every time I go and there's hardcovers, I have to get them. But it's been a lot of fun, and it's really cool too, because while I'm there, I look at the horror section. And anytime I see a book from any of the indie authors I know, I take a picture and I share it with them, and I'm all excited. So, I mean, I would love to find one of my books. You know, I may just bring some of my books there.
Just take them.
You know.
Just take some in. Just take some in and leave them there. That's the way.
I know. Yeah, that's
there is a Barnes & Noble. There is a Barnes & Noble where I live that has a few of my books in it that I snaked in there. Because it's got a UPC code, I get the money if anyone buys it, and I think a few people have over the years. It's been like 4 or 5 years now, but yeah.
That is brilliant. That's a great idea. Yeah. Although, I mean, if I did it, I mean, they'd probably, you know, I'd try and take loads in. And they sort of spot me. It's like reverse shoplifting. I don't know if there's a law. It's literally reverse shoplifting, you know, shopleaving.
Reverse shoplifting.
This is how come you came in with three bulging great big bags and you're leaving with nothing? I didn't.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And again, you have to promise to come back when your book comes out and talk about it some more.
Absolutely. Yay. I appreciate you guys having me.
And,
this was fun.
Yeah, and tell us real quick where we can find you online.
My main place is my website, nickbodick.com. And then I am also all over the internet, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, pretty much anything is just at Nick Boddick. And then the only other thing is youtube.com/Nick Boddick. And that's where
awesome.
My entire life is.
All right. Everybody be on the lookout for Daughter's Drawings early next year by Nick Boddick. And thank you so much for
You must come back on when it's published and we'll talk some more. That'd be brilliant.
I'll look forward to it. Yeah.
Okay, Nick. Thank you
awesome.
So much for joining
Thanks,
us. Have a great rest of your evening. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye now.
Bye. Right, it is break time, and we have to do this, otherwise our sponsors get pissy. So we'll be right back.
Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com, for James, and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Day is dawning on a Texas Sunday morning. How I long to be there with Marie, who's waiting for me there. Every lonely city where I hang my hat ain't as half as pretty as where my baby's at. Is this the way to church bell ringing, hear the song of joy that it's singing, for the sweet Maria, and the guy who's coming to see her. Just beyond the highway, there's an open plain, and it keeps me going, through the wind and rain. Is this the way to Amarillo? Every night I've been
Part 2.
Well, here we are again, and that always cheers me up. Always cheers me up. Although, you know, after sort of nearly 50 years, you think Tony Christie would actually know the way to Amarillo, but oh, somebody should have told him. You know, it's not, I mean, especially nowadays, you know, he could just put it in his GPS,
right?
You know, or at the time, even then, you know, they did have maps, you know, he could have got a nice ordnance survey map out and look, or a road map, or there's road maps that you used to buy at the, you know, at the service station and sort of looked it up instead of just thinking about it, you know. I mean, Tony, you know, get a grip.
I have this theory. We have Waze, you know, in our vehicle, and you know, there's sometimes they take us on such a weird route, and then it seems like it's different all the time. And I seriously think that you know, the computers are trying to get us very, you know, so that we depend on them so much, and then little by little,
we do.
I know.
It was funny. I learned the hard way, because mine will just take me in, and I was poofing along, and I was on the, he was trying to get me off the highway, you know, to go on the front, and oh, fuck that. No, this is that stupid. Because literally, I just passed the junction to come off, and like, you know, 100 yards down, boom, solid traffic, and I was just sat there for a good hour lamenting the error of my ways, and from that moment on, because it does, I mean, it saved my skin a few times. It will take you around the traffic.
I get that, but I still think they're trying to get us to depend on them so much so that, you know, and it's the same way with, like, Google. You know, a couple of years ago, I could ask it anything, and it would, you know, give me the answer. And all the time now, I'm like, oh, I'll ask it something. I can't help you. Why can't you help me now? You could help me before. Like, I don't know. I think they really dumbed them down or something. And the funny thing is I said that magic word, you know, Google. And now my phone's listening, and, like, everything's listening now. So they're not going to tell me any answers, but they'll listen to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why I refuse to have an Alexa or anything like that. I don't even have Siri activated on my phone. I mean, to be fair, it would be pointless. You know, me trying to have a conversation with Siri, it would just be like, yeah, I just don't even want to think about it. But, no, I you know, you hear stories of, you know, there was one about a year ago where somebody, he was listening to them, it recorded them and sent a chunk, because they were talking about some friends of theirs, and sent said friends of theirs the conversation.
Wow, really?
Thankfully, there wasn't anything inflammatory, but that sort of thing is like, whoa, you know.
We have one of those in, like, every other room, and sometimes my son, you know, teenage boy, he'll like to go over to it and, you know, say something that, you know, this is going to get us on a watch list somewhere, you know, and he thinks it's really funny, so.
Yeah, so order 3 kilograms of rice in and see just how quickly the FBI turn up on your doorstep, you know. But I mean, to be fair, it's on a practical level, I would just get so frustrated with trying to converse with some voice activated thing here, because, you know, the people don't always understand my accent, you know, and, you know, I have funny words for things, and it would end up going through the window, to be honest with you. So not the best idea for me. So anywho, What happens? I have no idea. I just turn up. Well, what happens now, Xtina? Do tell.
For our
No.
Yes.
No.
Oh, wait.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh.
No.
No. No.
What have okay. what haven't we discussed?
Oh.
Okay. last Friday was the most important day of the year, which is obviously my birthday. And for
your
my birthday,
yeah.
And the kids came along with me as well. Actually, and this is how, you know, how sad things. I actually went to my son's tattoo artist, who, to be fair, is phenomenal. And I had our logo demon guy tattooed on my arm, and
I love it.
I
yes.
posted. He's still like, you should see, he's healing now. It's just obviously he still had the plastic on when I posted him last week, but he's done a phenomenal job. When it's finished flaking and what have you, I'll post more pictures on Facebook, but so there
I'm
you go.
So
I'm now literally a walking advertisement. In fact, my daughter suggested just under it, at the top of my wrist, just having the date of when we incorporated Hellbound Books.
Ooh, I like
just
that.
Just have that date, and you know. But it's already a great conversation. So it's a great way of introducing.
Yeah.
As a marketing strategy, it's kind of. It does fall down a little bit because, as I said previously, you know, I hadn't left the house since Saturday, so
right,
I do need
to
get out a little bit more. But it's a great conversation,
definitely.
great lead in to our wonderful company. So there you have it. Anyway, I had to. So, what have we got coming up next?
On our next segment, we have Splatterpunk Award nominee, Glenn Rolfe.
Hello.
Hey. Hey, what's happening?
Hello, everything. It's been one of those weeks. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, you guys. I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Do you know, it doesn't seem like that long ago we were last talking. How have you been?
I know, it hasn't been that long. A lot of stuff has happened since then, but I mean, it feels like we just did this like 6 months ago or something.
If not early, but at the moment, I mean, certainly since sort of beginning of last year, time really has very little meaning. It's just like one long Monday right now. So, and it has been nearly 2 years already.
July of 2020, he was on last, so it has been.
Holy crap!
You know,
wow,
it has been a
yeah,
year.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
grief.
That's scary.
Yeah,
so
a lot has happened.
So well, obviously you have a new book, August's Eyes. Which that's my son's name, not Eyes. His name is August, not August Eyes. But the tagline: "When the past leaks out of dreams." .. Remember when we were kids and we used to, you know, in creative writing class, and you put more dots to build up more tension. So if it's really really tense, a really tense
I
ending,
that
you put
that.
Like you put like six dots, you know. So Glenn, tell us more about August's Eyes, please.
This book is it's a bit different. I try to do something a little bit different with each book. I mean, even if I'm, whether it's like, you know, even if I'm doing like a werewolf novel or a vampire novel, I try to do something different. I don't want to repeat myself.
Mm-hmm.
This book is a lot different from, I think, anything I've done because it incorporates sort of a dream world, spirit world type of thing with a serial killer that's passed. And there's also there's a bit of a coming of age aspect with one of the characters in there. And it's basically around this social worker who, when he was 12, saw a friend of his get kidnapped and ran and didn't tell anybody because he was scared. And kind of he blocked that out of his memory until his dreams later on in his life start showing him things that start bringing back some of that stuff that he'd forgotten. So it was really hard and interesting and a challenge for me to try to figure out how to incorporate his dream world into the real world and like pull that stuff together to make a big story. But that's basically what this book is about. I mean, so it's got a little bit of true crime, supernatural, coming of age. It's got all these things that I love, like, tied together, and some of them I've never done before. Like, I've never written a serial killer type novel before. So it's very interesting.
I have to say, I love the cover. I really do. So when you go to make out that signed book, that's X-E-I... N-A.
Oh, she's shameless. Don't encourage her. Don't encourage her. She's terrible. Make her pay for it. Make her pay for it.
Don't listen to him.
I love that cover, too.
Yeah, it's great. I do. It's really very catchy. It just draws your eyes right to it. I definitely like that. And I want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt for us?
I do. I usually been reading the prologue, but it's kind of long, so I decided just to skip ahead to, like, the first chapter for you guys, just kind of give a quick preview. Because in this book, like, the spirit/dream world that's in here is a place called Graveyard Land. And it's based off, like, when I moved town that I lived in here for the past 6-7 years, when I first got to town, I'm like, wow, there are a lot of cemeteries in this place. Like, what in the world? This is like a graveyard land. I said to myself, you know. And as soon as I said that, I was like, there's a story here. I kind of created, when I get an idea for a story, I like to sit down and start writing. Like, just like, I'm going to write like 1, 2, 3 chapters, whatever comes out like in this first spurt of inspiration. And I don't have any idea what it's going to become at the time, but I just like to get that idea into my computer and then set it aside until I have time to work on it, because usually I've got other projects I'm already into. So the prologue that I love of this book, I wrote after I finished the outline, which was like 5 years after the original idea. But this chapter I'm going to read to you guys is like the first chapter, the first thing I wrote. Pretty much. I mean, I've edited it since then, but pretty much after that first time I sat down, it's chapter one of this book. All right, so let me see. Okay, hold on. I'm out in my van right now because inside my house that I'm living at right now, like, the reception sucks, so I had to come outside. Where it's a little bit better. But it's all right. I got the dome light on. I'm good. I should be all right.
Brilliant. Good. What a lovely thought.
Yeah, I just want to make it work, you know, whatever it takes.
Thank you. Much right, appreciated.
So, all right, so it's part one is In Your Dreams is the name of part one of this book, and this is chapter one. All right. We all have ours picked out. Johnny wondered what the kid with one eye meant. That one's mine, One Eye said. He pointed into the fog. That one? Johnny said. Sure, Johnny. Which one do you want? Johnny still wondered what they were talking about. What makes you think he gets to pick one? August, a tall kid with a clawed hand, asked. His hollow eyes matched the straight black hair that touched his funny shoulders. Johnny thought it looked like he was wearing shoulder pads made of baby skulls beneath his faded blue Superman t-shirt. Johnny didn't like that August's shoulders made him think of baby skulls. But he thought that was August's fault, somehow. And those damn eyes, just two black holes. Pick one of what out? Johnny asked. A grave, stupid, August said. A grave? Come on, Johnny, One Eye said. Don't mind August. He's just sore because he can't play with us. August's black hole seemed to smolder. The clawed hand clutched tightly to one of his baby skull shoulders and twitched, and then opened and closed. One Eye bolted for the fog. Come on, Johnny, before August gets us. Johnny turned to run and tripped over a sign that hadn't been there moments before. Mud and wet grass smeared his eyebrows where his face hit the ground. The placard lay on its side in front of him. Graveyard Land, he said, reading the sign aloud. The fog swirled to life, creeping forward, surrounding him where he lay. The sign vanished within the thick mist. He could no longer see One Eye, but he could hear him calling from far away. Johnny, chattered. The surrounding fog prickled every hair on his arms. Where's August? He wanted to get up and run and try to find One Eye. Instead, he pulled his knees up to his chest and hugged them. Curled in a fetal position, Johnny cried. He searched the swirling fog. Two black holes peered back. Holy shit. John Colby scrambled from beneath the sheets. He reached out for the lamp on the nightstand and knocked the stack of magazines he'd been thumbing through earlier to the floor. What? Sarah mumbled beside him. What are you doing? He found the lamp and poked at the switch. The darkness retreated. What? Nothing. Go back to sleep, Sarah. What time is it? She asked. Her voice was muffled from the pillow she pulled over her face. Not time to get up. I'm going to go grab some water. It's all right. Just go back to sleep. She was out before he lifted his ass off the bed. He walked down the hallway, went straight to the kitchen sink. He didn't bother with a glass. He just craned his head to the faucet and took it straight from the tap. His horizontal view through the open rectangular window above was one of beauty. A gorgeous full moon, the mostly clear night, offered the thinnest clouds to float past its pale face, rolling like fog. The thought brought back a piece of his bizarre dream. He'd been having them a lot lately, always in the cemetery with these two boys, seemingly alone in the fog. John ceased slurping the water and instead let the cool flow pour down his numb lips. A howl off in the forest beyond raked a chill down his spine. He lifted his head, ran his hands through his short, mostly brown hair, though specks of gray had begun to appear sometime over the last year, and listened. The yipping howl came again. The moon's beauty was tarnished by the trace of a bad dream and the cry of the nocturnal. John wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and headed back to bed. Morning offered a cabaret of warm sunlight, the smell of fresh-cut grass rolling in through the open window on a warm summer breeze, and the sound of Sarah singing Katy Perry from the shower. John raised his arms and stretched. The extension of muscles and a wonderful mix of Saturday morning's easy, peaceful feeling made for that rare moment, life in perfect balance. Pat must have already finished mowing the lawn. John had to give it to the punk. Mohawk notwithstanding, Pat was a morning miracle worker. Hey, Morning Glory, what's the story? Sarah said. She stepped to the bedside in her blue silk robe with the pink flowers on it that he bought for her birthday a few months back. I opened the window as soon as Pat finished with the lawn, probably about 20 minutes ago. Thought you might like waking up to the smell of magic. She said that with a smile that made him fall in love with her. He loved that she referred to life's good stuff as magic. Fresh lemonade on a hot summer day, snow on Christmas, hitting the search button on the radio in the first station it lands on playing Walking on Sunshine. Still couldn't believe she'd said yes 9 years ago. He was grateful every day. I was wondering how I slept through the mower. Pat still wearing his punk rock uniform? He had his mohawk spiked to the sky, sleeveless jean jacket on with all those patches. But what? John asked. He was wearing bright green shorts. Pac Sun. I'd know them anywhere. What, no sex pants? Sex pants, she asked. Yeah, you know, the plaid pants with all the zippers and bondage shit on them. When she looked at him like he was weird, he said, a guy I worked with once called them sex pants. She leaned forward and kissed his forehead. Get up and brush your fangs. I want to kiss you like I mean it. Her brown eyes sparkled, casting a spell all their own. Yep, I'm on it. He jumped out of bed and glided around the corner to the bathroom. After they tangled up the sheets together, he followed her dancing booty down the hall to the best part of waking up. John figured this morning could challenge Folgers for the rights to that title. Sarah grabbed them each a mug while he snatched the French vanilla creamer from the fridge. Caffeine in hand, John went to sit at the table. No, Sarah said. I hear the porch calling. Sitting on the steps, staring at the freshly mowed front yard, John sipped his morning buzz and hummed an old 90s tune. It could have been something by Dinosaur Jr., but just as likely Everclear. So, did you wake up freaking out again last night, or did I just dream that? Sarah's inquiry put a permanent hold on his mystery tune and placed a set of cold hands on the shoulders of his perfect morning. Yeah, I had another weird dream, he said. Was it the same one with those kids? He told Sarah about August and One Eye. Not their names, but their oddness. Yeah, it was messed up. You want to talk about it? He wanted to forget them, but at least relaying the dreams aloud killed their creepiness with how foolish they sounded. Yeah, I was in a field with these two I told you about. Were you still a kid? She asked. Yeah, I think we were picking out graves. Sarah's lack of laughter didn't help scratch the creeps. Weird, she said. She took a sip from her Hug a Lobster mug and said, was the field someplace you recognized? She was great at helping him work his way back through these dreams. She knew just what to ask to jog the details from the places where his awake mind liked to hide things. He couldn't remember if they were in Spears Corner or maybe in some movie or someplace else he'd seen. Something screamed at him from the hiding place, but he just couldn't grasp it. A name, something that sounded like a board game or an amusement park. I'm not sure, but it was really foggy, so maybe it was Spears Corner. We have a lot of foggy nights with that damn stream. Well, maybe something from your past is nagging at you, she said. Yeah, maybe, John said. He doubted it, but just sipped his coffee and stared off into space. He no longer noticed the fresh-cut lawn, the brilliant golden rays warming his bare legs, or the pretty 30-something at his side. He could almost see the fog, the sign, those two black holes. Goosebumps broke out over his arms, and he shivered in the sun. All right, so that seemed like a little bit longer than I remembered it being, but...
That was brilliant. I like that. I got a question for you, Glenn. I noticed a lot of music references. Is music a big part of your creative program? I mean, I like that. You know, it puts you right there in the moment. I mean, is music a big influence in your writing?
Always is. And I mean, I think like Until Summer Comes Around was my last book. It was based in 86. So there was, I totally put as much stuff from 1986, stuff that I know and love because I grew up, I mean, I was 9 in 86, I think. But, you know, over those years, music was always so important to me in like every aspect of my life and has continued to be throughout. And this one was cool because I get to get back into the 90s, which is, I always think of myself as an 80s kid, even though I was just a, you know, little in the 80s. I really was coming of age more in the 90s, and it's something that I never really thought about until I started working on this book. Like remembering, holy shit, like when life stopped being perfect, you know, and like free and fun, like when you started realizing the ugliness in the world that was actually out there. You know, I was like 13, 14, 15, like dealing with suddenly having to deal with all this stuff, and all this 90s music was really what was the soundtrack to that time for me. So it's interesting bringing it back. And I mean, there's a lot of darkness in this book. It's a lot darker than Until Summer Comes Around, but the music's always heavily in all my books. Like I can't help it because it's like I love to read it. It helps me get back into the spot. Mm-hmm. That I'm looking to get into, and that hopefully works to get the reader there as well. I mean, it doesn't. If someone's younger, they might not get some of the references, but maybe they'll check them out. You know what I mean? Maybe they'll search them out, which is cool too.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in you know, I expecting my reader to be, you know, to think a little bit. You know, to look. I mean, I do. It's funny. You know, I guess grew up, you know, reading obviously Stephen King, you know, who wrote for the American, you know, wrote American, wrote for Market. And I learned so much. I had to look up what a sophomore was and a candy striper and all these terms that he used. it's funny if I actually got pulled up for one of my books for using whilst instead of while. It's literally, they put in the review. And here in America, we say while. Oh, well, fuck you, la-di-da. You know, where I'm from in England, we invented English. It's why it's called English, so fuck you. Because you can't put that on Amazon, because then Amazon get involved and it all gets nasty, you know. But literally. And I like to credit readers, or certainly my reader, and I think you're the same mindset, Glenn, you know, with a little bit of nous. And I think, and it's fun even now if I'm reading something and I come across that, either it's a cultural thing or whatever, or like a music riff or something, I will pause and I will look, because it's so easy to look stuff up now, you know, because you just pick up your phone, as I said before, the IMDb or Google it or whatever, boom, and the information is there, you know, and it's nice. It's nice that we can still learn, even when you get to my age, you know, you can still learn something new every now and then, which is kind of wonderful.
Oh, it's awesome, man. I love learning things at this age. You know what I mean? You think you go through all these stages of thinking you've got it all figured out finally, and then every time you do that, life fucking flips you upside down and says, you think so? No. You've got so much more to learn, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I would hate to get to a point where nothing surprises me, or like you said, okay, you know, an unpleasant surprise, like, you know, the piece of shit who stole my daughter's bank card, or, you know, something nice. You know, okay, I'm struggling to think of something nice that's happened to me recently, but I'm sure there's been something, you know.
You got a nice tattoo.
I got my nice tattoo. I did buy a house a month ago, so I suppose there's that.
That's pretty nice, too.
You know, so, yeah, but it just... Yeah, it's nice that we can still learn. And it's, you know, I sort of hooked up with a bunch of my old middle school and high school buddies on Facebook, and a number of them that are sort of in retirement now, some of them have retired, and it's like, oh, you know, it's like they're weary of life, and, oh, I've done it all, I've had my kids, and I'm pottering about, you know, pretty much waiting to die now. And seriously. And I refuse to do that. I'm having my third childhood. I'm having my midlife crisis again. I go shopping to the mall with my 12-year-old daughter, and we have a right time. We have a right time. You know, it's not,
absolutely,
you know. Yeah, but yeah, life's there. You know, it's too damn short to give up at 50, for God's sake.
Oh my God, so much changes. Like every year there's a billion new things to check out. So it's to close yourself off to everything would be nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always had this question when we have horror writers on and stuff. You know, we write scary things. We write to scare people. But, you know, I'm very curious to know what scares you.
Everything. Everything scares me. That's why I'm a horror writer. I'm like, I'm not a tough guy at all. So it's like, for me, like, you've got your love of snakes. Like, if I see a snake in my yard, I freak out. If it's just too fast, it makes me nervous. It moves too fast.
Well, see.
Even if it's like a poison, non-poisonous, which I think is what we have up here, garter snake or whatever, it's still so fast, it creeps me out. And I'm like, it's going to get me. I just like. Whatever,
yeah,
you know
the funny thing
spiders.
Is if I saw a snake, you know, outside, it would scare me because, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's, you know, venomous or anything, but so no, I totally get that.
Well,
I really
I'll tell you, sorry,
I've
got a story for you then. I mean, I'm snake. we've got now three now. We have a big one. I mean, he's like at least 12 foot now. He's fucking huge. He's 15.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This thing, he could kill you if you didn't handle him right. He could. Anywho, long story, many, many years ago with my second ex-wife, we went on vacation to Cancun. And we were at one of these resorts where you pay X amount and you get to do all these acts and everything's included and shit, you know. And we were just having a bit of lunch before going. We went horseback riding on the beach, which was phenomenal. And suddenly this snake, it was a thin one, but it was probably about 5.5, maybe 6 foot long, went zipping by. And of course, you know, that daft bastard Jim went running after it, didn't I? I went and I caught the damn thing. And I caught it, but I've got it by its tail. And my wife, she said, what do you know what it is? No, I've no idea, and I've got this thing. And I was just excited that I caught this snake. And it never once occurred to me that this it could kill. And yet now moving to Texas, where literally everything will kill you, literally, even the plants will kill you. Every snake, every everything will, it just won't kill you. I'm a little bit more aware, you know, we went fishing down the lake where we used to live and saw bloody great big rattlesnake, actually. They're just pottering around because they're like pottering around by the water and that. And so, yeah, you've got to be, you know, I'm a bit nervous about letting my back lawn grow a little bit too long in case it harbors, you know, coral snakes or stuff. Because they do, you get coral snakes. They're very common in backyards around here. and they will kill you.
That's the thing. Like in Maine, there's not a lot of like poisonous. I don't even know if there is a poisonous snake up here. There's maybe like one poisonous spider, and they're like rare. It's like these things aren't poisonous, but I've watched too much of like National Geographic Channel or whatever, and like seen too many of these things, and like everyone just freaks me out. I think, you know, they move too fast. They're too quick for me. They make me nervous. You know, everything from that to like, you know, I've got three kids. If anything were to happen to my kids, I'm like, that's terrifying. Like anything, sickness, kidnapping, break a leg, even breaking a leg, like freaks me out. Like, I feel like I'm going to lose my mind. And then there's like, you talk about movies. I'm not real scared of most horror movies. The only movie that really freaks me out still to this day is The Exorcist, because it just looks and feels so real to me. Every time I see it, I'm like, this is too real. I don't like it. I feel like something evil about this that's happening right now. Every time. I mean, I've only seen it like three times my whole life, but it freaks me out every time. And this time of year, too, when AMC starts showing the commercials and they show her, and I'm like, get like the willies. I'm just like, oh, my God.
Did you ever have the chance to see The Exorcist on the big screen?
Yeah, I actually I saw it once when I was a kid, and then I was going out with this girl, and her little sister was like 14 or 15, and she was acting all tough, and we're like, you know what? We're going to take you to see The Exorcist, because it had it's when it came back into the theaters, like 99 or 2000, whatever it was. Sometime back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it came back into the theater for a few weeks. And it had the full, like, cut, like, with the spider walk thing down the stairs.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was tough. It was like, I had a hard time getting through that thing. But it's like, yeah, we freaked her out. She was freaked out by that movie, so.
Brilliant. It's a good theater. Yeah, I saw it back in, God, I was 15 at the time, and it came here. It was back in the day when the theatre had, it was like just one huge, not all this multiplex bullshit. And they used to have the girl at the front with a little tray with all the little chalk ices and stuff that you put into me. I'm now showing my age. But yeah, seeing it on the big screen was just, this was back
like,
in the day
that,
when...
Like when it came out in the original run?
Not quite. I'm not quite that old. No, that would have been 70. Was that 74?
Yeah,
73
or something,
right? No, it came out 73. No, it came back around about, I think, 80, 81.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's when we went. It came back around. And it was on a double bill with The Exorcist 2, which was terrible. I haven't seen that. Oh, don't bother. The Exorcist 3, Legion.
I love the Exorcist 3.
George C. Scott, brilliant, but great film. I actually watched it again quite recently. But just something, seeing it in a darkened cinema, big screen was just, just amazing.
Yeah.
I would do, if it came again, I would go again and see it on the big screen, definitely, without a doubt.
And I imagine like seeing a movie that friggin' scary and real feeling back in the early 70s or even the early 80s, because like after the 80s, like everyone's been oversaturated with all this horror stuff. Like we've seen everything, you know what I mean? Because we have to watch every movie, right? So it's like, especially the 80s where it just boomed. I can imagine like just before that, catching this kind of movie would have had a lot more effect on somebody, you know, because you've been a little desensitized with the stuff we've seen in the last 30 years. So
absolutely.
But
yeah.
That's another reason the movies from the 70s are really some of my favorites. Like some of these movies, like, they just have this feel about them. Like it feels more real. I don't know what it is, but the 70s horror.
Yeah.
Movies
no, I think you're right. I think like you say, because they were few and far, like The Omen, the original Omen was just phenomenal.
Right.
And then you had like The Entity and The Changeling, and we could sit and name these movies all
absolutely
night, you know. But everyone seemed to be a classic, you know, and they were great. But like you say, the 80s hit, and probably got, by the time the 80s finished, it was, oh, for God's sake, it was just another one, you know.
The 90s, the early 90s horror movies are like, outside of like Candyman, were like terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Was Nightbreed early 90s? That was awesome too, but...
That might have been late. I remember, it's funny, at the end of the 80s, I think it was 88, 89 when Hellraiser came out, and I remember seeing Hellraiser, And it was back on. I got VHS from the local, and I literally rewound it and watched it again. I've never done that before, never done it since, and it was just still my favorite movie. It was just so refreshingly different. You know, it was just wow. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Glenn, I hate to do this, but we are out of time for our show. And yeah, you have to, again, you have to promise to come back. Yes, yes.
I'll come back. Oh yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff in the works right now. So,
oh, fantastic. We need to have we've said this before. We need to have a show where we just get people and just talk about movies because we're all obviously movie buffs.
Yeah.
So we should do that.
Definitely. Yeah, and for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy August's Eyes by Glenn Ralph and give us a shout out and let us know where we can find you online.
Twitter, but I don't even know what my handle is. I think it's Author Rolf, maybe. Facebook, I'm on there if you look up Glenn Rolf. If you go to Google Glenn Rolf, you'll find my horror stuff, so you'll find your way to me.
Awesome.
Just Google Glenn Rolf horror or Glenn Rolf, you'll find me.
Brilliant.
Awesome. I can't wait to have you back, Glenn. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, absolute pleasure, sir. We'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, definitely, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Right.
Well,
it's time.
I know, me too. Time has flown by, and it is unfortunately time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
I'm feeling mighty lonesome. Haven't slept a wink. I walk the floor and watch the door. In between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down broom. I'll never know a Sunday in this weekday room. Been talking to the shadows 1 o'clock till 4, and Lord, how slow the moments go when all you do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my eye, I'm hanging out on Monday, my Sunday dreams to dry. You know a man is born to love a woman, to work and slave to pay her debts, just because he's only human, to drown his past regrets in coffee and cigarettes. I'm mooning all the morning, all the night, in between it's nicotine, not much heart to fight. Black coffee, feeling low as the ground. I'm waiting for my baby to maybe come around. Gonna drown my past regrets in some coffee and a few cigarettes. I'm mooning all the morning, morning all the night. In between it's nicotine and not much heart to fight. Black coffee, feeling low. Driving me crazy. for my baby to maybe come around. Please come around.